We're in the middle of Perek Zayin of the Netzach Yisrael, and the piece of the Gemara that he's analyzing in the section that we're doing this morning, do a little bit more than that, but the piece is starting on the top of Nun Zayin Amud Beis in Maseches Gittin. Amar Rav Chiya bar Ravin, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Karcha. It's a famous Gemara. It has its own kina on Tisha B'Av. It's on the bottom of page Mem Dalet in the classic edition, and on the top of Kufayin Beis Amud Aleph in the new classic Hartman edition. Amar Rav Chiya bar Ravin, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Karcha. Soch Lizokin Echad Mianchi Yerushalayim. One of the elders of the people of Yerushalayim talked to me, and he told me the following. B'bikazu haragnu v'zaradan rav tabachim asayim v'achas esrei ribay. In this bika, in this valley, in this field, Nebuzaradan, the Rav Tabachim, right, the head slaughterer, general, killed Masayim Vachas Esrei Ribay, 211 multitudes. Of Yerushalayim Harag Tishim Yarba Ribay. In Yerushalayim he killed 94 multitudes, Al Evan Achas, on one stone. Ad shaholach doman v'noga b'domei shal Zachariah, until their blood extended to the point where it touched the blood of Zachariah. V'kayim ha-shenemar, to fulfill the pasuk which says v'domim b'domim nagu, the blood touched the other blood. It's a doomsday prophecy, you know, where you know the blood is just flowing and meets up with one another. Ashgechei l'domei de Zachariah David Kamartach. So the Gemara now explains the background. Zachariah was a Kayin Venavi. Right, this is not the Zachariah of the book of Zachariah. Right, this is a different Zachariah. And the Zachariah was also a Kayin Venavi. And he was Mechiach Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael didn't like what he had to say. So they killed him. So basically a general occupational hazard of the rabbinate. Ashkechei ledamei de Zachariah David Kamartach. They found the blood of Zachariah. He found the blood of Zachariah that was bubbling. The solik. And it kept going, right? It was just bubbling and bubbling. Omar, he says, my high, what is this? Omule, they said to him, dam zvachim de ishtapach. This is the blood of Korbonis that was spilled. And it just, you know, just seemingly the way you read the Gemara, this is just some innocuous statement. Here is some blood of the carbon that was spilled. I see dami v'leidmu. So, but this Nebuzaradan was not to be easily fooled. So he decided to do a comparison. And he shechted some cows, he shechted some rams, he shechted some lambs, he shechted some goats. And none of them did the blood really match. And therefore, he wasn't really satisfied, even though, you know, Rashi says in Chumash that when they tried to sell Yosef, right, to bring an alibi about Yosef, so they shechted a goat, right, because the blood of a goat is like the blood of a person. But evidently, it seems that it wasn't quite the same, then according to the literal reading of the Gemara. Amar Lui said to them, Yamritu li mutav vilav masrikna l'psarayichu masreke departli. He says, you guys tell me what's going on here, or else I'm going to comb your flesh with iron combs, and we'll see what happens. Nice. Okay? Nice, nice little thing. Amri Lei, they said to him, my name aloch, what can we tell you? Nevi'a Havabon, there was a prophet amongst us. He used to rebuke us in divine matters. We got ganged up on him, and we decided to kill him. That's what we did in order to address this problem. It's already several years that the blood has not rested. The blood is still bubbling. Amar Lahu, so he said, oh, I know what to do. I will calm him. I see Sanhedrin Gedolah and Sanhedrin Katana. He brought the great Sanhedrin and the small Sanhedrin and Kotaliluya, and he killed it. In other words, this is the leadership of the Jewish people. So, you know, you give back the leadership, you hold the leadership culpable. But it didn't help. He brought young men and young women. Nothing. Killed them. Thousands. Didn't stop. I see Tinaikashal based Rabban Kotaliluya. Children. V'loy nach. Amar lei, so he said, Zachariah, Zachariah, Tovim shebaheni vadetim, Nichaloch de'avdinu l'kulu. You took their worst. You destroyed their, not their worst, their best. Right? And now you want me to just keep going and destroy them all? Kid Amar lei hachi, when he said this nach, then the blood of Zachariah calmed. Vahi shata hira tshuva bedate. And at that moment, Nebuzaradan had a thought of tshuva. Amar, he said, Umayim al nefesh achas kach. If this is the abiding revenge for one soul, Hahu gavad the kotel kohani nishmas alachas kama v'kama. Right? They killed Zachariah, one person, and look how much they had to suffer. Now I killed all these people, and I murdered so many in my battles here for Yerushalayim. How much more so? Orak ozal shodar shtar patar to bebeisei. So he ran away from his service. He went AWOL. He sent a get to his wife, a divorce to his wife. Presumably not a get, but he sent a divorce to his wife. V'igayir, and he converted to Judaism. Tana, we learned Naaman ger Taishavaya. Naaman, that we have famously the story about him, right in Sefer Melachim with Elisha, where he was a Sar Tzavon Melech Aram, an Aramean general. And he came to the Jewish people for advice to treat his skin condition, to treat his tzaras, right? So he was so impressed, he gave up on Avodah Zarah, but he was just a ger taishav. He didn't join the Jewish people. He just stopped doing the things that even non-Jews are not supposed to do. However, Nebuzaradan ger tzedek haya. Nebuzaradan became a Jew. Mibnei bonav shel Haman lamdu taira b'bnei brak. Haman's einek lach learned taira in b'nei brak. In Eretz Yisrael, Mibnei Banos Shal Sisra Lamdu Tinekes B'Yerushalayim, the descendants of Sisra, the general who also fought against the Jewish people and was assassinated by Yoel Eshes Chever Akeni, they taught Tinekes children in Yerushalayim. There's a Masorah in Chazal, there's a Masorah that Rabbi Akiva was a descendant of Sisra. Mibnei Banos Shal Sancherev Lamdu Torah B'Ravim, and the descendants of Sancherev, they taught Torah publicly. Man inon, who are they? Shmaya v'Avtalion. Famous Shmaya v'Avtalion, who were mentioned in Pirkei Avos in the first perek as links in the chain of tradition of Klal Yisrael. Haynu d'chsiv, and that's what the pasuk says. Nasati dama es dama al tzchiach selu vilti kasais. I had its blood spilt on the rock that it would not be able to be covered, wouldn't be able to be absorbed. Okay, so that's the Gemara. This is the Gemara that the Maral is going to explain, that we're going to be discussing today. And the Gemara has two distinct stages. One is the actual story of Nebuzaradan finding the bubbling blood of Zechariah and then proceeding to try to do what he could in order to be able to calm it down. And then the morning after, where Nebuzaradan says, oh my gosh, look what happened over here. And as a result, he converts to Judaism and his descendants end up, right, whatever, not his descendants, but we describe all these other people whose descendants end up being this way, that way, or the other way. So, you know, positive things incorporated, integrated within the Jewish people, all these people who stood up against the Jewish people, ending up being part of the Jewish people. That's the Gemara. And it's a juicy one. Okay, so let's try to learn a little bit. The Maral is remarkably terse about this Gemara. We're going to talk about what he says, and we will do what we can to try to fill in the gaps of the things that he doesn't say. Now, The first theme here, so to speak, of the Gemara is that this blood sought its revenge, right? The blood was bubbling, it was boiling. It refused to calm down. The blood sought its revenge. And this is something, this is a theme, as the Maral points out, that we find many times. I mean, he doesn't bring so many sources, or Hartman brings more sources, or even more places than that. But, you know, for instance, the Pasuk says, La'oret lo yichupar ladam asher shubach bo ki'im b'dam shefchai. For the land will not be cleansed or forgiven for the blood that was spilled on it without the blood of the one who spilled it being spilled. That's the only thing that can placate the earth or the blood that originally fell. When blood is spilled, so there is a tremendous demand for some kind of a consequence, some kind of a revenge, that will be there in order to be able to settle the score and in order to be able to gain an atonement. And we find this again, it's something which the Torah speaks about, and it speaks about it even from the very, very beginning, from the very beginning of time. The first murder, which was the murder that Cain committed of Hevel, so what does it say? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Cain, Kol demei achicha tzayaki melai min ha'adama. One second. Your brother's blood, or bloods, are crying out to me from the earth. In other words, you're not going to get away with this. Right? You can't just make that disappear. That blood is crying out for revenge. It's the way it's characterized. That's the way the Torah chooses to characterize it. And it's something we have to understand together, what that means, that it's doing that. And remember what the pasuk over there says as well, as a follow-up, when Hashem speaks to Cain. He says, Orurata, you are cursed, min ha'adama, from the earth, asher potasa espia, that opened its mouth, lokachas es mei achicha miyadecha, to receive the blood of your brother from your hand. There was something cursed about the ground. What's the ground doing swallowing up this blood? The ground was your partner in the murder, swallowing up the blood, and you'll never be able to partner with the ground again. Cain was made into a person who was chronically in exile. He never settled, connected to the ground. Somehow, the earth swallowing up the dam, swallowing up the blood, there's something awry here. There's something which won't work over here. So this is something which we find. It's a biblical theme. It's not a theme of Chazal. It's a biblical theme which Chazal are plugging into over here. So that's one thing which we're going to have to understand to begin with. But before we go to look at that with a little greater depth, I want to share with you the Maharal's remarkable reading of this Gemara, where the Maharal helps us again to get out of our Amelia Bedelia phase. Right? We always speak about this idea in the way you read the words of Chazal. You can read the story that Chazal tells us, and you can take it absolutely literally. There was a pile of blood sitting next to the Mizbeach, and it was going blah 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 blah. It was bubbling away, and what is this blood? Oh, this is just the blood of some carbonus, right? You know, some extra blood that was flowing around. And he went and he made a laboratory test, and it didn't seem to be the blood of animals. So you got to tell me what the story is. And it kept bubbling until he yelled at it, and then it stopped bubbling. That's where you read the Gemara. That's the way you can easily read the Gemara. Says the Maharal, no, that's not the way to read the Gemara. The Maharal seems to learn that he didn't even see any blood. That Nebuzaradan didn't even see any blood. But Nebuzaradan was agitated and motivated to destroy the Jewish people. He knew that he had in him this burning push as an agent of destruction against the Jewish people. So he said, tell me something. Why? What is it? What is it that is pushing me, right? This blood, so to speak, is bubbling. There's something here that's just not letting me rest. What is it that's pushing me to destroy the Jewish people? And they wanted to claim to him that it was the blood of Karbonis that was spilled. And the Maharal says what that means is that they were saying, you know, the reason why this has happened to us is because we didn't serve Hashem properly. There was certain neglect and failure when it came to the offering of our Karbonis. The Avodas Hashem that we did was not so full, was not so complete. But he looked at it, quote unquote, and he compared the blood of the Karbonis to the blood that he saw bubbling. In other words, he looked at what was pushing him, at the extent to which he was being pushed internally by something to destroy the Jewish people, and he knew it wasn't just because of a failure in the service of Hashem. He knew there had to have been something that was much more serious that was happening over here. And so, he said, this isn't it. This isn't it, there's something more. And so, they told him the truth. That it was because they had murdered Zechariah, they had murdered the one who was telling him that they had done something wrong. And of course, in that sense, we know from the Nevi'im, that what Yerushalayim was destroyed over, what the Midrash was destroyed over, we know even from the Nevi'im, we also know from these Agaritas that we've been learning, was not simply because of religious failures. was because Yedechem Damim Maleu, right? Their hands were filled with blood. There was plenty of interpersonal damage that was done, that was being achieved, that was being inflicted on a constant and ongoing basis by the Bnei Yisrael. And that was what really, really did them in. Yedechem Damim Maleu. And that was where he came back to them. So he understands the Gemara in that sense, this picture of the dam as being more figurative as a description of the story than sort of like an actual viewing of this blood that was bubbling there. Just like you would say, you know, Loretz Leichuper al Dam Ashishuv HaPachim Adam Shevcher, we're not talking about cleaning the blood off of the surface of the earth. Right? It's not what it means. It's a figurative expression that the blood still, so to speak, demands its revenge. So that's just something very, very important as to how the Maral chooses to read this Gemara and explain that which is happening here. Now, so he says, he says that when he finished with the thing and he said, you know, I did enough already, so then he sort of like estimated, so to speak, and he was calmed and he said, you know, it's enough. He felt like he had done the mission, whatever that mission was. Now, let's look a little bit at this thing here of the dam demanding its nekama. It's something which we find again as a consistent thing, but let's look at it a little bit more closely. There's a pasuk in Megillas Eicha that refers to this. The Gemara doesn't bring the pasuk, but in the Kina of Tisha B'Av that we say about Zechariah, we bring this pasuk. The pasuk is at the end of the second perek of Eicha, pasuk Chaf. Re'ei Hashem v'abita l'mi el al takoi. Hashem, look and gaze to who you have done all of this stuff, this destruction. Im teichalna nashim piryam eilelei tifuchim. If women will eat their fruits, the young ones that they raised, right? This was the extent of the famine during periods of siege of Yerushalayim, that people, as the Torah warns, as the Chumash warns, right? It says in the Chumash that this will happen. Yedei, right? What is the language of the pasuk? Haraka b'cha v'ha nuga asher l'nisrach chaf raglo hateg al oretz mizaneg merech teira enob whatever what it says what mitez mean misar banav asher tachel banav asher tachel, right? They literally ate the corpses of their children. Right, that was the extent of the ravages of the famine. That's what the Torah predicted, and that's what we find in the Navi. Right, the Torah tells us, the Navi tells us these stories during the siege of Yerushalayim in the time of Chizkiyo, and at other times, horrible. And that's what the Navi says. Look what you did, right? And even, you know, the Gemara describes agaritas about women, a woman who loved her baby so much that whenever she would take him and she would weigh him to see how he had grown, and she would give the extra weight that he had grown in gold to the Beis Hamikdash as a gift. That's how she treasured every bit of the child as the child developed, as the child grew. And she ended up with the same situation of eating her own child. And the pasuk continues, Imi areg b'migdash Hashem kohen v'navi. If it will be killed in the Beis Hamikdash of Hashem, a kohen and a navi, which is Zechariah. Zechariah was Kohen v'Navi. That's the pasuk, and the way it's understood is that one is the question, and the other one is the response, right? As Rashi brings over here in Chumash, Ruach Hakodesh Mishivasam, the divine spirit comes out and responds to them. And you're saying, you wonder how the Jewish people should have to be made to suffer such tragedies. So he says. So we say back to him, V'chi. Where am I? Tell me something. Was it okay that they killed Zechariah? So this is, you know, this is a constant notion which we have in Eicha, which we have in Kinos, which we always have, right? And which would be a very valuable thing as well, you know, contemporarily in our own attitudes. We turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam, look what you did, look what we suffered, look what this, look what that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, one second, once you're looking, why don't you look at the things which you did also? Why don't you look at the things that you did also? I'm not working in a vacuum. I'm not bringing you these difficulties in a vacuum. So that's the response. It's a very interesting turn of a pasuk. They eat their children, He'll be killed in the base of Hamikdash. So you're right, it's a pretty terrible thing that the Jewish people did. Horrible, 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 horrible thing. And maybe it deserves a punishment. But they're sort of like, we're describing the most very specific kind of a punishment. And we say it was because of this sin. So this is what I want to suggest to you. The Kayan Vinavi in the Beis Hamikdash, the way the Gemara describes it, whether it's literal, whether it's figurative, and he was killed by Migdash Hashem, whether the blood was sitting there in a bubbling puddle next to the Mizbeach or not. But Zechariah HaKayan Hanavi was killed in the Beis Hamikdash. That's mamish, the Migdash is the nurturing terrain for the Kayan. That's where the Kayan thrives. And certainly it's the source for the Navi. Right? The Migdash is the point of connection. When Moshe Rabbeinu, the ultimate Navi of all Naviim, where did he get Nevuah? He went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He went to the Holy of Holies. The Migdash is the radio tower, you know, that receives the signals from above. That's where it comes from. And the Navi was killed right there in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash that spawned, that bore, that produced the Navi, is then being asked to swallow it up. So in a sense, just looking at the pasuk, before we get further into it, you say, oh, look at this. These women who carry these children, who nurture these children, who nursed them after they were born, who took care of these children, now they end up swallowing them up and eating them. What a terrible tragedy that is. And it is a tragedy of epic proportions. You produce it, and then you have to destroy it yourself. And we say, look what you did. In the Migdash, that produced and made the Kohanim special, that gave the Nevi'im their entire power, and what did you do? In that Migdash, you killed them, and so to speak, you made the Migdash swallow up the blood of the Kohen V'Navi. Right? You were going, and you were taking that which nurtured, and you were stuffing it back into its face, so to speak. So there's a little bit here of a Midah Keneged Midah. And indeed, when we speak about the earth swallowing up the blood of a person, there's also to some degree that.
Mother Earth.
Now let's talk about this a little bit, okay? And again, we're so to speak, ad-libbing here for the Maharal. In this place, the Maharal doesn't speak about this. You know that this idea of im techal anashim piryon, right? If the women will eat their fruits, isn't that the whole nature of the way death works? Your Mother Earth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Adam HaRishayin, he said to him, when he prescribed to him death, he says, Ki ofar ata velofar tashuv. You are dust, and you'll be returned to the dust. He said, V'zeh asapech atech alechem, by the sweat of your brow you will eat bread, atshuvcha el ha'adama, until you return to the earth, because from there you were taken. You were taken from the earth, returned to sender. You're going to go back to the earth. Because you are dust, and you will return to the dust. So, in a sense, isn't that im techal nanashim piryon? Isn't that saying that, here you go, you produced it, you brought it out, you gave it life, and now it will come back to you. Right? That irony is already there. And you could say, sure, it's true. You don't have to answer the question. You could say, exactly, that is the tragedy of death. The tragedy of death is that the earth produced man, and man was supposed to be eternal and to live forever, and we say, you know what? It's not going to happen. He's going to break down, and he's going to end up right back where he started from. And that could be part of the tremendous cry of the tragedy that happens there. But the earth is built to swallow up the human being. Ofar atav el ofar tashuv. But when it comes to the earth swallowing up blood, forget about it. There, we say, oh, it won't swallow. It won't happen. The earth doesn't swallow. Cursed is the earth. The blood of your brother is swallowing, is screaming out to me from the ground. I wanted just to suggest this to you like this. Let's start with the practical and then get a little bit more beyond, you know, by just reviewing the morale that we learned last week. In that very distant past, there are two ways that a person can return to the ground. One way the person returns to the ground is when their body eventually dies, right? The body breaks down. In a certain sense, the body's breakdown is in itself a process of decomposition. Right? When the Ramban quotes those who didn't believe that man could ever be immortal, they said, of course man has to be mortal, man has to die. Because man is a composite creature. He's made from a bunch of different things that are put together, locked together, work together as a system, and things which are put together eventually start to come apart. Right? Any murkav, any composite, seifel hisparid, ends up breaking down into its component parts. And therefore, death is a natural process where things sort of come apart and break back down to their component parts. Man started off as Zophar. He was put together into something, into a magnificent, humming, functioning, composite creature. But in the end, he's going to come apart and he's going to end up back Ofer El Hadamah. That's natural death, and that's what happens in a natural death. In a natural death, the systems, right, a person, Lo'aleinu, I mean, with Hashem's help, they live long enough. And as they live longer, so then, you know, the system starts to have its wear and tear, and things don't work as well as they did. They start, so to speak, to come apart. Right? Decomposition is not reserved for the grave. Right? Aging, the wear and tear of aging is, to some degree, already the beginnings of that decomposition. Baruch atu Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam
Shehakol Ne'eh B'Dvarei. Planned obsolescence.
Correct. And you have it. I mean, look, I mean, I'm not, it's been a while since my biology courses, but, you know, there's a stage of life where the cells are producing and producing and producing and producing, and then there's a much more, you know, they're dying and they're producing, but the producing is outflanking the dying, and then it starts going in the other direction. Is that correct? Right? Something like that. Excuse me for oversimplifying. But you know, that's the basic idea. That's what happens. And again, even without, you know, you understand, Ofer Atav El Ofer Toshev, there's such a thing as a natural progression called death. Shvichas Dam, the swallowing of blood, right? So again, that's the classic murder, like Cain's murder, right? Chazal say that, right? He never had the chance, the opportunity to watch one of these things on television. Right, he was just dealing with the first time, so he didn't know exactly how you kill a person. So first he tried to stab him in the earlobes, right, then on the fingertips. Right, he kept going and going and going till he found the source of life. But it was damim, it was blood. The way life is ended, lo'aleinu rachmona litzlan, early, is by the spilling of blood, by murder. Whether it's by a sword or by a bullet, it doesn't make a difference. It's all the spilling of blood. And the life force, which was still there and still functioning with great, great potential, is pulled out of the body. It's pulled out of the body. And that's not natural. Ofer Atav El Ofer Toshuv describes this most natural process. So natural that we have to explain, oh, but before the Chet, it never would have happened. You know, how does that work? So we explain, we discuss, we understand that would have been the miraculous work of the Neshama to somehow hold it together, make it into something beyond, you know, just these separate little parts. However, in the simplest sense, you put it together, it's going to come apart, right? Like your 87 Toyota, right? That's what's going to happen eventually, right? The components are going to separate from each other, right? Sometimes when you're driving down the street, right? So that's the way it is. But Ritzicha is not that. Ritzicha is not that. Ritzicha, it was good, it was functioning, it was live, it wasn't coming apart. But somebody yanked out its life force, arrested it prematurely. And that, the earth cannot accept. That's where the blood, so to speak, bubbles and boils. The blood of your brother, they're crying out to me from the Adama, from the earth. And let's just go that next step, which is the Maral step. Remember last week we talked about the idea of the blood flowing into the river? Remember when we talked about all the victims of the massacre of Beitar, till their blood came and flooded the river, and it was two-thirds water and one-third dam, and we explained that mayim by its nature is, right, it's always in the plural. Right, mayim is just chaymer, it's just matter before it's tsura, before it's refined. Whereas dam is the opposite. Dam is the unifying life force. Dam is the ultimate surah. Dam hu ha-nefesh. Dam is this liquid that flows through the veins and manages to make the whole organism function together as one. Dam is the life force, right? So when the dam is spilled, the offer, the earth cannot swallow it up. It can't swallow it up, right? Adam is from the Adama, and his life force is dam, right? You understand what's happening over there, right? You have the word dam. Add to it an aleph, you have Adam. Add to it another hey, you have Adam. So without getting into the details of the specific additions of the aleph, of the hey, of whatever it is, but you understand that that represents, right, Adama as opposed to Ofer. When we speak about Ofer, we speak about dust, not alive. Adama, when we speak about Adama, what are we speaking about? We're speaking about fertile ground. Right? Adama is that which can grow things within it. Right? And that's why Adam is said that. That's the life force. Ofer atav el ofer tashuv is the decomposition, the futility, the decay, the dust. But Adam was supposed to be something bigger. And so, when it's arrested, it doesn't work. The earth can't take it. Right? It's still in full form. And that's im teichalna nashim piram eilalei tifuchim. Right? That the mother should devour its young? That's not comparable to the earth. Yes, in a certain sense it is. Mother earth. But you know what that's comparable to? It's comparable to Kivrei Avos. Kivrei Avos. What's Kivrei Avos? An ancestral burial plot. Here, a person dies after 120 years, and what do? You take them, and in the most ideal world, they're buried next to their parents. What's Epis? What's the idea? No, they're going back. Right? They came from their parents. In a certain sense, they're together with their parents. They're going back to their parents. That's normal. That's natural. But lo'aleinu rachmanu litzlan, when the mother survives the child, when the mother survives the child and swallows back up the child, that's not the way it's supposed to go. That's not ofer atav el ofer tashuv. That's the dam trying to be swallowed up by the ofer. And we're not ready for that. And so that cries out in its injustice, that it can't be, that this is not going to be the way that it can that it can go on. And that's all, that's im techal anashim pir melei tefuchim. If you're going to kill somebody in his prime, and you're going to kill him where he was nurtured, the Kayan Venavi in the Beis HaMikdash, on top of all that, right? You're going to kill him there, right? Cutting him off, so to speak, at the source from where he was drawing his greatest life. He was a Kayan serving in the Beis HaMikdash. He was a Navi drawing from the Ruach HaKodesh that's present and alive and giving in the Beis HaMikdash. You need to cut it off there. So then Hashem tells the Klal Yisrael that they'll taste the same thing in their own personal lives. Yes.
Can you say that
Kivrei
Avos is the life force of the
Dam?
Is that what you're saying?
Not while they were alive. You have different indications, to be sure, where sometimes it is spoken of as if they shechted them to have them, and sometimes it was just the corpses.
It's hard to comprehend that.
The whole thing is just impossible. It's impossible, but it happened. And it happened in more recent history.
The murdering of the Kohen.
Navi.
That's also a line right after, or right by where they're talking about.
That's the same pasuk in Eicha. In Eicha, not in Lechemish. Lemi'elato im teichal anashim piryam oilu le'tipuchim. Women will have to eat their fruit, the young that they raised. Im yehorei b'migdash Hashem kayin v'navi. It's the same breath. Mamish, the same breath.
But it's not in Lechemish.
No, it's in Megillas Eicha. Megillas Eicha. In Lechemish it doesn't speak about it. In Chumash, it speaks about the klalos about eating children, but not this. Okay, so that's the story, so to speak, of Damai Shel Zachariah. But then Nevuzaradan, Rav Tabochim, he looks and he says, "Oh my gosh! If this is what Hashem, this is going to come of one person. Imagine what it's going to be for so many." Hashem drove me. Hashem gave me the power to pay this nekama. Imagine what it would be for all of these. And so he was Megayer. So I just want to point out to you one thing.
took a long time to figure that out.
So hard to understand the stories in the simple, you know. Yeah, I mean, why didn't he realize that in the middle and stop doing it? But the answer is because that thing which was egging him on, what I told you before, right? This was the spirit which was within him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu moved him to do this. So once he was finished his job, he wasn't just go back hunky-dory, reconnect with his wife. He says, oh my gosh, I did my job. But whoa, look at this. Imagine what's gonna be over here. Now, he was worried about repercussions when he was doing his job. Perhaps he was worried about repercussions. But listen to another story from the same world of the destroyers of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's the famous story of Unculus. Right? We learned half of the story, part of the story, so to speak, of Unculus, is the Gemara in Gittin that we discussed together, where he was, you know, having all these, bringing up, summoning all these spirits and asking them about Geirus, right? About what the important thing is. But the other part of the story is how Unculus went and he convinced people to join him, right? The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Aleph, Unculus Bar Kleinimus Igayur. He converted. Shadar Kesar Gunda Duraimaya Basri. Remember, this was a big, big fall, right? This was, you know, that the nephew of Titus, who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, should convert to Judaism. We could think of some creative and colorful contemporary examales, right, of the
Democratic presidential hopeful comes to Republic.
Right, that would be a good one. What?
Yeah, you're Stalin's grandchild, is
that true?
Right.
There are these Nazi Einiklach who became Jewish and so on and so forth. Yeah, whatever it is. But, you know, here it's happening, and the Romans were still in power. It's not like after 1945 and the Nazis and, you know, something drummed it into their head. This is at the height of their power, just like in the case of Nebuzaradan. Here it's at the height of his power. It's not because, you know, they got wiped and now they're figuring things out. So Unculus converted. So the Kesar send a group of Romans to go and nab him and bring him back. Mashchinu Bikroi and Igayur. He started talking to them and learning, right? He gave them, you know, a shear, and they said, whoa, and they converted too. Okay, so much for that. He sent another group, he said to them, you guys go, but don't stay for a shear, right? It could be fatal. So when they went, he says, okay, you're right, I don't want to tell you a shear, Unculus said, but let me just ask you something. I just want to say something. Nifura nokat nura kami pupiura. Pupiura leduchsa duchsa lagmen agmen lakuma kuma minokat nura mikami inish. What this means is, it's using terms which aren't familiar to us, but what we would say is like this. We would say, okay, so you have a congressman will hold the door open for, or will carry the light ahead of the senator. And the senator will do it for the cabinet minister. And the cabinet minister, the cabinet secretary, will do it for, you know, the vice president. And the vice president will do it for the president. Who does the president hold the light for? Very good. Very good. I thought somebody was going to say the joke with the Pope. Everybody knows the joke with the Pope?
No.
It's a great joke. So the Pope came to America, and he gets picked up on the tarmac by this real brand new bulletproof Cadillac limousine, and he gets in, but then he taps on the glass and he says, excuse me. He says to the chauffeur, he says, excuse me, and he opens the thing, he says, you have to forgive me, but I always wanted to drive one of these babies. He says, could you sit in the back? So he says, if that's what you say. He gets into the front seat, he's driving, you know, GPS gets onto the parkway, and he's driving, like, puts the pedal to the metal, he's driving 120 miles an hour, and the state trooper comes and pulls him over, and he goes up to the front of the car, and he rolls down the window, and he takes one look, and he sees who's in there, and he nearly faints, and he goes back to his car, and he says, gets on the radio, he says, Chief, you're not going to guess who I just pulled over. He says, no. He says, you pulled over the mayor? He says, no. Worse than that. says, you pulled over the governor? He says, no, worse than that. He says, you pulled over the secretary of state? No, worse than that. The vice president? No, worse than that. The president? No, worse than that. He says, come and tell me, who is it? He says, I'll tell you, I have no idea, but the Pope is his chauffeur. So who does the lahavdil? Who does the president chauffeur around? That was his shaila. He says, who would he hold the candle for? So he said, nobody. So he said, you know that for Klal Yisrael it says, and Hashem hoylech b'amud anan. Hashem went ahead of them with amud anan, with amud esh, with a pillar of fire, lighting the way for the Jewish people. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Melech Malkei HaMelechim, the King of all kings, what did he do? He went and he held the light for Klal Yisrael, for his people. They were Megayer. Oh my gosh, they never showed up, right? The Romans sent, they found out. Another bunch of Yeshiva Bochrim learning over there with Unkelus. So they said, this time go and don't even engage in conversation. So they kept the deal. So they came in, they said, Unkelus, we're taking you away, and don't say a word. So he didn't say a word. And as he's walking out of the door, he kisses the mezuzah. The kiss of death. He kisses mezuzah, and then he explains to them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands on the door in front of every house. Instead of there being a secret service agent standing at the door guarding the king is guarding his people. And they were Megayer, and then the Romans gave up. What made Unkelus convert? Right, man chashu b'hi alma, we have our Gemara, who's important in this world? Yeah, but you see that this was the theme of Unkelus, and this was the theme which brought everybody around, which was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks out for his people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of Klal Yisrael. That's what made the people convert. Was it theological? There's only one God, it has to be, I figure out, it can't be Christianity, it can't be Islam, it can't be this, it can't be that. It must be this, and therefore they did it. Unkelus was Megayer, like Avraham Avinu was Megayer. Avraham Avinu was Megayer because he said, Ki amarti olam chesed yibana, that God is not on an ego trip, God is on a giving trip, on a kindness trip. He realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world because he wanted to give to his creatures. And Unkelus said, look at this. That's our religion. Our religion is that we have the mezuzah on the door, that Hashem stands there. That Hashem is there to protect us and to take care of us. And that was the compelling argument for Yiddishkeit. And that was the same argument of Nebuzaradan. Nebuzaradan said, look at this. Look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done to protect one of his good ones. He's looking out, he's protecting his people. Some would perceive it as a God of vengeance. It's not. It's the God of standing up for one of his neshamas, for one of his souls, for Zachariah, Kohen Venavi. And that's what brought him to Klal Yisrael. And those who haven't, is because what do they say? They say, Leis din v'leis dayan. Nothing matters. Hashem doesn't. Hashem has put this world on autopilot. Anybody can do whatever they want, and Hashem is not going to respond. There's no judge, there's no judgment, there's no repercussions. It's all part of it. That's what brings them to rejoin, to become part of Klal Yisrael. So I think this Gemara is completely consistent. The Gemara here about what made Nebuzaradan convert is completely consistent with the Gemara that describes what made Unkelus convert. Okay. So he converted, and he joined the Jewish people himself. Now, Haman never converted, as you know. Sisera never converted. They were murdered. They were killed. Right? Deservedly so. But their descendants joined the Jewish people. So the Gemara here is saying a repeated theme. By all of these people, with their enmity and their animosity to Klal Yisrael, somehow they ended up back in Klal Yisrael. Their destruction of Klal Yisrael, they ended up back in Klal Yisrael. What's the idea? So I want to just start with what the Maral writes second about this, which is Titus, is the noticeable absence from this sugya. It doesn't say anything about Titus or his children being part of the Jewish people. Unculus was a nephew of Titus, Bar Achse de Titus. So maybe that's something, right? But Titus himself, we don't have, he's not on the list. Right? He's not on the list here of all those people who did it. And if you remember, again, I'm just reminding you now, this is what he's going to say, is just hearkening back to what we talked about before. Remember how Titus died? How he was killed, right, by his own request, and what HaKadosh Baruch kept doing them, right? He was cremated and scattered the ashes over and over and over again. Because we said Titus was an absolute, complete destroyer. His M.O. was Churban, complete, complete destruction. And therefore, from him, nothing is salvageable. Titus she'ekech she'lekech mashchis. Right? Titus, his power was a power of complete hashchasa and kilkul. And therefore, he was completely separated from Hashem Yisborach. He was completely separated from Hashem Yisborach. As opposed to the others. What happened with the others? So the Maral explains, and he says like this. Why do they all end up being, to some degree, within the Beis HaMikdash? Within, not with the Mikdash, within Kal Yisrael. Because he says, these people, these destroyers, they were divinely sent. They were divinely sent. Right? Well, we just read the story about Nebuzaradan, right? There was this spirit that was moving him. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, somehow, as the language of the Maral is, Yesh lecha ladas, sharashoyim, kasherim uflogim berishus, rishoyim, evil people, when they are outstanding, unusually, in their evil. V'yesh lam kach gadol ma'ayv, and they have this immense power, like these who were mentioned had. Somehow, they're serving as agents and partners of Hashem in bringing about this terrible evil. But they did it in the negative way. Their partnership was to bring down the good. But somewhere along the line, it ends up becoming refined. The partnership with Hashem left an impact. And even if at the moment of their partnership, it was to destroy and to break, but ultimately, there's something there. There's something there. There's something which is very significant there. And that's what ends up coming around. There's a bechina ma, tzad bechina ma shel kedusha. There's some aspect, and if in the father's case it was distorted, but in the child's case, it came out right. Greatness is often carrying with it. Greatness does not equal goodness. But in there is some magnificent power that will end up coming out in these people to be something, you know, above and beyond. That's the notion which it says over here. A powerhouse for evil can end up also being a powerhouse for good somewhere along the way. Titus was so, had to destroy it completely. The other ones, you know, wanted to leave a remnant, so it showed that they had some connection to the Kedusha. It's a very, very, very interesting idea. But I want to share with you, and this is what we're going to do with the Maral. We have, I think, what we'll try to cover the rest of it, one more section in this Perek Zayin next time. But I want to share with you an incredible teich in this Gemara, which was said by Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and it's published in his Sefer, Yunim B'Mikra, in Parshas Toldos. In Parshas Toldos. V'hoya kasher torid uforak de'ula mi'al tzavarecha. And we've talked about Esav coming for his bracha after Yaakov already took it. And, Yitzchak Avinu says to him, what can I tell you? You know, he's going to be your boss. But he says to him, look, okay, so when he falls, you should remove his oil, you should remove his yoke from upon your neck. So Chazal say as follows, right? This is in the Medrash. Amar Rav Yesi bar Chalafta, Imar Isa Achicha Perek Ula Shol Tera Me'olav. If you see your brother removing from himself the yoke of Tera, Gezer Olav Shmadim Ba'ata Shalef Bay. Make Gezer Shmad try to force him away from his religion further, and you will rule over him. Yitzchak is giving this advice to Esav HaRasha. It's one thing for him to tell him, you know, when Yaakov fails, then you'll have your chance. But to say, then go and, you know, try to bring down Yaakov Avinu. Like, what's going on over here? What's he doing? So Rav Yankov says a big yesaid, which is a very strong and important yesaid that is worthy of a discussion for itself. The Rambam's language generally, when he speaks about the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctifying Hashem's name, the Rambam says, Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzvah al Kiddush Hashem. All of the Jewish people are Mitzvah al Kiddush Hashem. He makes it sound like it's different than any other individual obligation, which, you know, a person has to be a bar mitzvah to be obligated to do it, and so on and so forth. It sounds like it's a general national position, a national mandate. And so, Rav Yankov says that the idea is that this is not like a regular personal responsibility. It's an outcome-based issue. You need v'nigdashti b'seich b'nei Yisrael, that Shem should become sanctified through the b'nei Yisrael. And so, for instance, we have a notion which says, echad shoygeg v'echad meizid b'chil Hashem. Doesn't matter whether you intended it or not, right? It's still going to be an issue by chil Hashem. Why? Because it's not an issue of culpability so much. It's not an issue of intent so much. It's an issue of the fact that you're supposed to be somehow a vehicle for Kiddush Hashem. So therefore he goes on and he explains that this is the pshat in this Gemara, where it speaks about B'nei Bonav Shel Sisra U'Tatayr Nushalayim, the B'nei Bonav of Haman who Tatayr in B'nei Brak. Right, the Bnei Banim of Nebuchadnezzar, perhaps, right, wanted also to be a part of it. So why should they be able to have a part in the Kiddush Hashem? So he says as follows: Lachem, Kivin Shaidei Sisra Bo Hanes Hagadol Val Yodin Iskay Mashiras Devirus. This is fascinating. He says Sisra fought a battle, but he lost. And through the losing of that battle came the victory of Devorah, the song of Devorah. He was a player in an act that produced the great Kiddush Hashem, in a sense despite him, in a sense because of him. Sancheriv, right? When Sancheriv laid siege to Yerushalayim, a tremendous miracle happened. And all of his soldiers suddenly fell and died. And it was such a great miracle that Chizkiyahu was expected to say Shira at that point in time. It was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem that came about through the defeat of Sancheriv's armies. Haman was hung, and because of that we have the miracle of Purim, the festivity of Purim, where we celebrate and recognize, wow, Hashem is there, even in the most hidden of times. He caused a great Kiddush Hashem. So therefore, even though their intention was for the opposite, but they ended up being part of the package of bringing Kiddush Hashem Ha'ilah. A player in history, a player in Jewish history, that provides one of the steps to bringing about those climactic endings, the Kiddush Hashem, ends up being considered a tool for Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, they have a schus. They have a merit. That's what Rabbi Yaakov suggests. Now, it doesn't explain. It's not the same as the Maral, in the sense that we would say that Nebuzaradan converted, right? Because from Nebuzaradan, we don't have any direct Kiddush Hashem. We just have the murder. Unless you would say that when the blood was calmed, so there was some Kiddush Hashem in that. But it certainly is not of the same variety as the other ones. So in the Vuzaradan's case, it describes his own epiphany, his own, you know, his own understanding of what happened. But this idea that the descendants ended up part of Klal Yisrael is saying because they were a tool, an unwitting tool, but it doesn't matter. They were a tool and therefore part of the process of creating Kiddush Hashem. Something to think about. something to think about. It's a very, it's quite an idea.
So what do you, why is it Untos is Berisha's nephew? Because Titus was totally...
Titus himself and his line, his descendants, were completely wiped out because Titus was a destroyer. What he's saying is that, you know, somebody who would hold on, basically, I mean, to say it in very practical terms, somebody who would destroy a lot but salvage something. So then you see a little bit of the positive aspect that's in there, and that even in what he was destroying, he had a chibur with some kind of an attachment to the great and to the godly. But somebody who just destroys and destroys and destroys, and his whole motive is just destruction, doesn't want to take any of it for himself, then it's off the charts.
He didn't create any Kiddush Hashem according to Rabbi Yaakov's Peshat also,
right?
Nothing
from
him.
No. No, we don't have the happy ending yet, huh?
Destroying Amalek, we were told to destroy 100% and not
right.
keep anything. So.
Right, and it's associated with that. Now, the Kiddush is, now, so Amalek we would put under the same category, right? They say that distinction, that Amalek was nizdavigly most of the opposition to the Jewish people that we experienced over the time, they hosted us, and then they killed us. Amalek just bumped into us along the way and tried to knock us off along the way. We weren't in their way. We weren't in their face. We didn't come to them. And then, you know, it's not like Mitzrayim. Mm. You know, it's not like Bavel. Amalek was always, you know, this distance, this arm's length. It was the destruction. Chiddush is that Haman is Mizera Amalek. And nevertheless, Mivnei Banav Shel Haman. Learn Torah. So, you know, this is part of a big halachic sugya about whether you can accept a convert from Amalek or not. You know, that's one of the things which is brought in. But that's for another time. And so Hashem, we'll talk about it some other time. Okay. Have a good day and a good